Fascism, What It Is and How to Fight It by Leon Trotsky. How Mussolini Triumphed. From What Next? A Vital Question for the German Proletariat, 1932. At the moment that the normal police and military resources of the bourgeois dictatorship, together with their parliamentary screams, no longer suffice to hold society in a state of equilibrium, the turn of the fascist regime arrives. Through the fascist agency, capitalism sets in motion the masses of the crazed petty bourgeoisie and the bands of declassed and demoralized lumpenproletariat, all the countless human beings whom finance capital itself has brought to desperation and frenzy. From fascism, the bourgeoisie demands a thorough job. Once it has resorted to methods of civil war, it insists on having peace for a period of years. And the fascist agency, by utilizing the petty bourgeoisie as a battering ram, by overwhelming all obstacles in its path, does a thorough job. After fascism is victorious, finance capital directly and immediately gathers into its hands, as in a vise of steel, all the organs and institutions of sovereignty, the executive, administrative, and educational powers of the state, the entire state apparatus together with the army, the municipalities, the universities, the schools, the press, the trade unions, and the cooperatives. When a state turns fascist, it does not mean only that the forms and methods of government are changed in accordance with the pattern set by Mussolini. The changes in this sphere ultimately play a minor role. But it means, first of all, for the most part, that the workers' organizations are annihilated, that the proletariat is reduced to an amorphous state, and that a system of administration is created which penetrates deeply into the masses and which serves to frustrate the independent crystallization of the proletariat. Therein precisely is the gist of fascism. Italian fascism was the immediate outgrowth of the betrayal by the reformists of the uprising of the Italian proletariat. From the time the First World War ended, there was an upward trend in the revolutionary movement in Italy, and in September 1920 it resulted in the seizure of factories and industries by the workers. The dictatorship of the proletariat was an actual fact. All that was lacking was to organize it and draw from it all the necessary conclusions. The social democracy took fright and sprang back. After its bold and heroic exertions, the proletariat was left facing the void. The disruption of the revolutionary movement became the most important factor in the growth of fascism. In September, the revolutionary advance came to a standstill, and November already witnessed the first major demonstration of the fascists, the seizure of Bologna. Note, the fascist campaign of violence began in Bologna, November 21, 1920, when the Social Democratic councilmen, victorious in the municipal elections, emerged from City Hall to present the new mayor. They were met by gunfire, in which 10 were killed and 100 wounded. The fascists followed up with punitive expeditions into the surrounding countryside, a stronghold of the Red Leagues. Blackshirt action squadrons, in vehicles supplied by big landowners, took over villages in lightning raids, beating and killing leftist peasants and labor leaders, wrecking radical headquarters, and terrorizing the populace. Emboldened by their easy successes, the fascists then launched large-scale attacks in the big cities. End note. True, the proletariat, even after the September catastrophe, was capable of waging defensive battles. But the social democracy was concerned with only one thing: to withdraw the workers from combat at the cost of one concession after another. The social democracy hoped that the docile conduct of the workers would restore the public opinion of the bourgeoisie against the fascists. Moreover, the reformists even banked strongly upon the help of King Victor Emmanuel. To the last hour, they restrained the workers with might and main from giving battle to Mussolini's bands. It availed them nothing. The crown, along with the upper crust of the bourgeoisie, swung over to the side of fascism. Convinced at the last moment that fascism was not to be checked by obedience, the Social Democrats issued a call to the workers for a general strike. But their proclamation suffered a fiasco. The reformists had dampened the powder so long, in their fear lest it should explode, that when they finally, with a trembling hand, did apply a burning fuse to it, the powder did not catch. 2 years after its inception, fascism was in power. It entrenched itself thanks to the fact that the first period of its overlordship coincided with a favorable economic conjuncture, which followed the Depression of 1921-22. The fascists crushed the retreating proletariat by the onrushing forces of the petty bourgeoisie. But this was not achieved at a single blow. Even after he assumed power, Mussolini proceeded on his course with due caution. He lacked as yet ready-made models. During the first 2 years, not even the constitution was altered. The fascist government took on the character of a coalition. In the meantime, the fascist bands were busy at work with clubs, knives, and pistols. Only thus was the fascist government created, slowly, which meant the complete strangulation of all independent mass organizations. Mussolini attained this at the cost of bureaucratizing the fascist party itself. After utilizing the onrushing forces of the petty bourgeoisie, fascism strangled it within the vice of the bourgeois state. Mussolini could not have done otherwise, for the disillusionment of the masses he had united was precipitating itself into the most immediate danger ahead. Fascism, become bureaucratic, approaches very closely to other forms of military and police dictatorship. It no longer possesses its former social support. The chief reserve of fascism, the petty bourgeoisie, has been depicted. Only historical inertia enables the fascist government to keep the proletariat in a state of dispersion and helplessness. In its politics as regards Hitler, the German social democracy has not been able to add a single word. All it does is repeat more ponderously whatever the Italian reformists in their own time performed with greater flights of temperament. The latter explained fascism as a post-war psychosis. The German social democracy sees it in a Versailles or crisis psychosis. In both instances, the reformists shut their eyes to the organic character of fascism as a mass movement growing out of the collapse of capitalism. Note: the Versailles Treaty, imposed on Germany after World War I, its most hated feature was the unending tribute to the victorious Allies in the form of reparations for war damages and losses. The crisis referred to in the above paragraph was the economic depression that swept the capitalist world after the Wall Street crash of 1929. End note. Fearful of the revolutionary mobilization of the workers, the Italian reformists banked all their hopes on the state. Their slogan was, "Help, Victor Emmanuel, exert pressure." The German social democracy lacks such a democratic bulwark as a monarch loyal to the Constitution. So they must be content with a president. Help Hindenburg exert pressure. Note. Field Marshal Paul von Hindenburg, 1847 to 1934. A Junker general who gained fame in World War I and later became president of the Weimar Republic. In 1932, the Social Democrats supported him for re-election as a lesser evil to the Nazis. He appointed Hitler chancellor in January 1933. End note. While waging battle against Mussolini, that is, while retreating before him, Turati let loose his dazzling motto, "One must have the manhood to coward." Filippo Turati, 1857 to 1937, leading reformist theoretician of the Italian Socialist Party. The German reformists are less frisky with their slogans. They demand courage under unpopularity, which amounts to the same thing. One must not be afraid of the unpopularity which has been aroused by one's own cowardly temporizing with the enemy. Identical causes produce identical effects. Were the march of events dependent upon the Social Democratic Party leadership, Hitler's career would be assured. One must admit, however, that the German Communist Party has also learned little from the Italian experience. The Italian Communist Party came into being almost simultaneously with fascism. But the same conditions of revolutionary ebb tide, which carried the fascists to power, served to deter the development of the Communist Party. It did not give itself an accounting as to the full sweep of the fascist danger. It lulled itself with revolutionary illusions. It was irreconcilably antagonistic to the policy of a united front. In short, it was stricken with all the infantile diseases. Small wonder. It was only 2 years old. In its eyes, fascism appeared to be only capitalist reaction. The particular traits of fascism, which spring from the mobilization of the petty bourgeoisie against the proletariat, the Communist Party was unable to discern. Italian comrades informed me that, with the sole exception of Gramsci, the Communist Party would not even allow for the possibility of the fascists seizing power. Once the proletarian revolution had suffered defeat, once capitalism had held its ground and the counter-revolution had triumphed, how could there be any further kind of counter-revolutionary upheaval? How could the bourgeoisie rise up against itself? Such was the gist of the political orientation of the Italian Communist Party. Moreover, one must not lose sight of the fact that Italian fascism was then a new phenomenon, just in the process of formation. It would not have been an easy task even for a more experienced party to distinguish its specific traits. Note. Antonio Gramsci, 1891 to 1937, a founder of the Italian Communist Party. Imprisoned by Mussolini in 1926, he died in prison 11 years later. He sent a letter from prison in the name of the Italian Party's political committee, protesting Stalin's campaign against the left opposition. Taglati, then in Moscow as the Italian representative to the Comintern, suppressed the letter. Throughout the Stalin era, Gramsci's memory was deliberately effaced. In the period of de-Stalinization, however, he was rediscovered by the Italian Communist Party and officially enshrined as a hero and martyr. Since then, there has been considerable international acclaim of his theoretical writings, particularly his prison notebooks. End note. The leadership of the German Communist Party today reproduces almost literally the position from which the Italian communists took their point of departure. Fascism is nothing else but capitalist reaction. From the point of view of the proletariat, the difference between diverse types of capitalist reaction are meaningless. This vulgar radicalism is the less excusable, because the German party is much older than the Italian was at the corresponding period. In addition, Marxism is enriched now by the tragic experience in Italy. To insist that fascism is already here, or to deny the very possibility of its coming to power, amounts politically to one and the same thing. By ignoring the specific nature of fascism, the will to fight against it inevitably becomes paralyzed. The brunt of the blame must be borne, of course, by the leadership of the Comintern. Italian communists, above all others, were duty-bound to raise their voices in alarm. But Stalin, together with Magnitsky, compelled them to disavow the most important lessons of their own annihilation. Note: Dmitry Magnitsky, 1883-1952, headed the Comintern from 1929-1934. His removal heralded the switch from ultra-leftism to the opportunism of the Popular Front period. Later appeared on a diplomatic stage as delegate to United Nations. End note. We have already observed with what diligent alacrity Ercole switched over to the position of social fascism, i.e., to the position of passively waiting for the fascist victory in Germany. Note: Ercole, Comintern pen name of Palmiro Togliatti, 1893-1964, headed the Italian Communist Party after Gramsci's imprisonment. He survived all zigzags in Comintern's line, but after Stalin's death, he criticized Stalin's rule, as well as some of its continuing features in the USSR and international communist movement. End of section 2.